You've tuned in to the Crispy Noodle Podcast.
Do you realize what you've done?
With Rich Liebig.
The real gangster plays his cards right.
And Michael Costanzo.
What was that that you just read?
Let us be the crispy noodle in your vegetarian salad of life and boring news.
Good times, noodle salad.
The point is, you now have the ability to be happy.
And now, here's Rich and Mike on the Crispy Noodle Podcast.
Hello, 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 and welcome to another episode of the Crispy Compact Communique, the 2020 shortened, crazy, virtual, shenanigan version of the Crispy Noodle Podcast. Thank you guys for tuning in to another interesting episode. I'm Rich Liebig.
I'm Michael Costanzo.
And we are here to give you some interesting tidbits in the world of sports, entertainment, and odd news in an hour podcast, whether you watch it on Facebook or in your car on the audio version. We're everywhere. Thank you guys for supporting us. Another crazy week of headlines to get to. We actually have crispy noodle news, but before we get into that, Mike, I see you're ready for Halloween.
I'm ready for Halloween. That's right. I am recording from my girlfriend's apartment, and she is a huge fan of Halloween. And today we went shopping at Michael's for Halloween decorations, and this was one of the things that we acquired, a little skeleton, and she put a little headband on it.
There you go.
She wanted me to start the show with the skeleton. So
does the skeleton have a name?
The skeleton doesn't have a name yet.
Oh, what are you doing?
I know. That was a major oversight in preparation. Major oversight.
Yeah, you got to give it a name.
The directions were that put the skeleton in the podcast. But there's no name for the skeleton.
Yeah, you got to give it a name. Spooky the skeleton? Something like that?
So it's clearly a girl skeleton with the pink headband.
Oh, okay.
So, I don't know.
Yeah.
Which should, I don't know, like...
Spooky the skeleton? I don't know.
Shelly the skeleton?
Shelly the skeleton? I don't know. I don't know why that would make sense, but sure.
Shelly. I don't know. What, you just spooky?
Spooky or Shelly, something like that? I don't know.
I was trying to go with S's.
Yeah. We'll have creative work on that.
Yeah, we'll have. Also, the skeleton doesn't really stay in frame.
Yeah, you're having
or work with the background.
Yeah, you're having some trouble there.
But speaking of backgrounds, man, people got to switch to the video podcast. Speaking of backgrounds, we're both rocking television backgrounds.
Yep.
Today. Zoom backgrounds. You have Succession.
Yep.
I have Schitt's Creek.
Yep.
All celebration of the Emmys, which we'll get to later in the show.
That's right.
But let's do a top of the show type stuff. Rich, what have you been up to?
So actually just a quick side note before we I just want to get this out of the way. We're doing just a little bit of change with our scheduling. What we're going to do is to kind of fit with the NFL season a little bit better. Our show will premiere the video form on Wednesday night at 9 p.m. And then, of course, the following day, Thursday morning, the audio podcast goes out on Spotify, Google Podcast, all that stuff. So just a quick little, you know, tweaking of the schedule so that we cover the upcoming football week because of that dastardly Thursday night football.
I hate Thursday night football. And I'm glad that you remember things like that because I didn't.
Yeah, that's why I'm here. But yeah, so just, I don't know if you guys, want to note that down in your video watching calendars. We're going to do for the video version, Wednesdays, 9 PM. And then the audio podcast comes out the following morning. Just in case we have to do football topics on Thursday, cause it's Thursday night football and, or anything else time sensitive like that. So there, just a quick little production header for you. All right. So personally, I'm enjoying the cooler weather personally.
I knew you would.
This past week in Philly has been just perfect for me. I love
it. It's been really nice.
It's actually been below average, which I'm happy to say. I love that chill in the air. I love when you wake up. I see. I don't get people that don't understand this. I love the fact when you wake up, there's a little bit of chill. So you can either, you know, if you are cold, you can throw on a little like sweater, or you can get a hot cup of coffee, or, you know, like there, it's like a good balance. Like you can fit either way, you know?
Right.
I love it. I think this is the best time of the year.
I really like the fall because you're right. It is that comfortable middle ground where if I've always said, if you get cold, you can always put on more layers.
Right.
If you're too hot, eventually taking off layers will result in a criminal charge.
Or being on the odd news.
Or being on the odd news. So you want to avoid that at all costs.
Yeah.
But I like it. I like in the morning you wake up and maybe you're right. It is a little bit chilly. You snuggle down under the blankets, you know, you get a cup of coffee, whatever. And it's very comforting. It's a very comforting time of year, I think.
Yeah. So I'm all for it. This has been my favorite time of the year.
Yeah.
Mike, how about you? Anything else happening personally?
Nothing much big. I made chicken parm.
Oh, why didn't you send me any?
Because I've been eating it for the past several meals. So I don't know why I decided to talk about this, but I decided to try and make chicken parm, and it's a big moment for me. You know, I breaded the chicken cutlets, I fried them up, I, you know, put it all together, baked it in the oven. Yeah, exactly.
There you go. Look, yeah. Well, no, hey, so Faizan, get into your get that garlic, rub it on your palms. You got to get ready. Come on.
That's right. But no, it speaks to a larger topic though, that throughout this entire pandemic thing, I've been trying my hand at cooking different things. You know, I tried my hand at baking, I tried my hand at chicken parm, and you know, really perfected Chef Ramsay's scrambled eggs. You know, so it's just one of the things that I've been doing throughout 2020, really, is just learn how to cook salmon, how to, you know, make, you know, just a whole bunch of different things. So just one of those fun things that,
yeah,
the next thing that I tried was chicken parm. I also made chicken tikka masala.
Oh,
so yeah, I'm getting trying to, well, my girlfriend made the sauce. I just browned the chicken, but okay. I still count that.
Yeah. I still did something.
So the point is that cooking is happening, and, just one of those fun things I've taken on as a project in 2020 is to become better in the kitchen.
Yeah. Actually I have a similar goal as well. I've been trying to cook, more often.
It's fun, right?
Yeah. And, Rachel got me an Instapot.
Ooh, so, fancy.
Yeah. So I tried my hand at doing some pressure cooking recipes. Turned out pretty good.
What'd you put under pressure?
I did
did you sing the Queen song while you did it?
No, I didn't.
Damn you, Rich.
I know, I should have. No, I did a stroganoff thing with pasta shells.
Okay.
I got the recipe from a great website called Pressure Luck, which I love. Like, that's like the perfect name for a game show fanatic like me.
You would.
Pressure Luck. And it was a fantastic website, by the way. If you're looking for new recipes to try with a pressure cooker, it's fantastic. They have something like 100 recipes to go with. You'll never repeat the same recipe twice unless you really like it, which is a good thing. So yeah, I've been trying to do more cooking as well. So I think it's a good goal. I think everybody should be trying to in this crazy coronavirus year.
Right. And also it's just a good skill to have in general.
Yeah.
You know, I knew how to make breakfast. So I was like, I need to branch out. I need to try, you know, making some real dinners, salmon and chicken and stuff like that. So, yeah, absolutely. It's been fun.
So, there you go. Programming change, cooler weather, and cooking. There you go. That's our introduction.
It makes sense for our show's title. The Crispy Noodle, cooking.
That's right.
Food. I mean.
Right. You know, that is funny. One of the tweets we got, I think it was like 2 years ago, was, you know, for you guys being called the Crispy Noodle, you guys don't talk about food a whole lot. And we're like, we need to change that. So
we absolutely. Yeah. We do need to change that.
Food will. Maybe we can sneak that in as a new topic.
A new topic. The whole show is themed after food already.
Sports, entertainment, food, odd news, something like that. I don't know. We'll think about that in creative.
Well, you know what, Rich? Some things change, but some things stay the same. One thing that always remains the same is, of course, the first topic of the show is always sports. And I know you're excited to get to the very first sports topic. It's a little bit of golf news. It's kind of late in the year for golf, given everything that's happened in 2020.
Yeah.
And you're making claims here, I see, that the game of golf has changed forever.
There is,
what does that even mean?
Yeah, right. There's some,
this game doesn't change at all.
There's some dramatic analysts afoot with this recent development. 27-year-old Bryson DeChambeau wins the second major of the year, the U.S. Open. But what was really startling was the method in which he won it. Bryson DeChambeau, for those that are not familiar with golf, he's known as primarily a pure power hitter. For lack of a better reference, this is the guy you think of when you think of kind of like a Happy Gilmore kind of player. He is okay. Just pure power off the tee. And a lot of people thought that it's cool and, you know, it gets the highlight reel and people love to watch it. But he never win a major with it, you know?
Right.
How can you win a major when you can't hit the fairway and all this stuff? Well, guess what? DeChambeau sought to prove the haters wrong, and he did in the U.S. Open magnificently in the final round on Sunday, because he was the only golfer to have a score under par, which sealed the deal for him winning the major. So, basically, this whole theme of changing the game of golf theme goes like this.
Right.
A guy like DeChambeau is purely trying to get as far as he can off of the tee, and he's the kind of player that he would rather have a 50-yard pitch from the worst rough versus a 100-yard pitch and he's in the fairway. And it's an interesting compare and contrast, because it goes against conventional wisdom that you want to stay in the fairway because the fairway gives you the most reasonable lies, the most lies that you're the most familiar with and everything like that. But DeChambeau, a guy like him, you know what? If he can turn the second shot from being just a simple approach shot to all of a sudden just a chip or a pitch, I mean, he's got a point, you know? And if he's not doing the traditional way of attacking a golf course and he still wins a major, I don't see any problem with it. He's just playing the game of golf his own way.
You know, it makes a lot of sense. Basically, he's trying to put other people on the spot because he's basically brute forcing it. He's
yes.
like, I'm going to get there faster than you guys in terms of stroke count. So then it forces the other people to take risks, to play a little bit unconventionally, maybe outside their wheelhouse. They're maybe pressing a little bit too much. I have a golf game on my phone where sometimes what I do is I do the same thing. I intentionally shoot it into the rough because it's closer to the hole than to go, you know, around the actual course. Because in my mind, I mean, sure, maybe the next shot is a bad shot, but I can get to the green in two shots instead of three.
Right.
It's simple math.
Yes. And what you're trying to do is we actually saw this at the Masters when the champion there had that drive on a par four. He smashed it. He got lucky and it rolled right up to the green, but it's the same philosophy. It's just, I'm going to whack the crap out of this golf ball, and I would rather get it as far as possible and worry about the lie when I get there versus trying to worry about the lie while I'm in the tee box. I'm trying to hit a specific area so that my next shot will be, you know, predictably all right, stuff like that. It's interesting. It's definitely a silent change, especially since we're coming off the heels of the Tiger proofing era. Because, you know, 20 right. years ago when Tiger Woods was unstoppable, all these courses were pressured to Tiger proof their courses by making fairways narrower or extending the length of the golf courses more or making hazards tougher to get out of. And it's interesting that instead of more finesse, the answer seems to be, like Mike said, just pure force. And
force,
maybe
yeah.
maybe this is the new way to play, especially in this is something else too. This is primarily for the younger audiences. You know, you're not going to get Phil Mickelson coming out there trying to pound at 350 yards. That's just not going to happen. He's too old. But
right.
for the younger guys, play to your strengths. If you've got pure strength and pure power off the tee, use it. And apparently for DeChambeau, it worked. He was the only golfer under par on Sunday. I mean, that's pretty telling.
Yeah, I mean, that speaks volumes right there. And, you know, it's just dawning on me, like, okay, so maybe you're not lying in the perfect spot, but if you're strong enough and you can basically hit it out of anything, right? Like, well, if it's in the rough, you can...
But also, it depends on, I know this is going to sound weird, but the intricacies of your wedges, which is also another factor that actually has really gotten, like, more specific in more recent years. Back, like, 20, 25 years ago, when you bought a set of clubs, the only thing you knew that you were getting was maybe a pitching wedge or a sand wedge. But now, the golfers, when they construct their bag, they have specific wedges, 60 degrees, 56 degrees.
Oh my God.
Yeah. But see, here's the thing. When a guy like DeChambeau, who's gunning it all the way down the length of most of these golf courses, that's the only thing he needs. He just needs to be able to choose the right wedge to get out of the situation, and he's good. So it's been an interesting new development over the last couple of years, and it seems to have come to fruition with this win with DeChambeau. Very interesting stuff.
Interesting. Yeah. So he won. I've never heard of him before. Young up-and-comer. Maybe you're right. Maybe this is the winds of change in golf.
Right.
But
yeah, and also, by the way, kudos to him. Dinner's on him. He won $2 million with that win.
Wow, yeah, he's picking up the tab for everyone.
Yeah, I want a free dinner. I just did a 10-minute segment on you, DeChambeau.
I give me my dinner. More than you, I deserve it, because I had to sit through the golf news.
Okay, fair enough.
But you know what they say, Rich? The more things change, the more they stay the same. And unfortunately, things are not changing in football. The Eagles this week, much like last week, got humiliated. They lost to the LA Rams 37-19. Why, Eagles? Why? Rich, what is going on? What's your initial gut reaction? What's your hot take on this last game?
So the loss to the Rams is a little bit more forgivable. The Rams are a pretty good team, and I knew Aaron Donald was going to cause some havoc on the offensive line, but the headline is still Carson Wentz is just not... He's not taking the next step. This is his fifth year in the league, and he seems to either be plateauing, or you could make the argument he might be regressing a little bit, which is very worrisome that you want to hear out of your a worrisome thing you want to hear out of your franchise quarterback. And what also makes it hurt too is the Eagles were contending in this game. They were one possession away in the third quarter, and then it just seemed to all of a sudden everything came up Rams in this game. This is starting to look like a dicey situation for the Eagles coming up.
So I this is so tough for me. I'm so disappointed in the Eagles, and I have one foot in each camp. I have one foot in the support Wentz camp and one foot in the is Wentz regressing camp, because I'm looking at the stats, and from a stats perspective, just going by quarterback rating the past couple of years, he goes from, you know, 80 overall to over 100, again over 100 in 2018, last year 93, but the second most touchdowns he's had in the season, you know, so it's like the stats don't show that he's regressing, but he's not passing the eye test.
Yeah.
Right? When you watch him in games, he's making bad decisions, he's forcing the ball. He's, you know, has a lot of fumbles. In his brief 4-year and 2-game career, he's had 33 fumbles, 137 sacks. So I think there is some valid concern here that at least his technique, his mechanics are regressing. Does he still have the ceiling and the potential to be an MVP caliber quarterback? Absolutely. I don't think anybody's debating that. I think what we're debating here is that he doesn't have the proper coaching to keep him in line, and that there's still, I think, whether people want to admit it or not, a mental aspect with him Right? I think he's pressing too hard. He feels like he's got to take the team on his back, and he's not passing the eye test right now for me.
Yeah.
You know, in the last game, what was it? 2 picks, no touchdowns. He's thrown over 40 times a game, but it seems like he's not moving the ball. He's not going anywhere with all this passing.
So obviously there's a lot of blame on Wentz here. Do you think there's some blame to go around on Doug Peterson?
Oh, I think definitely. I think that there was maybe not Doug Peterson himself, but maybe in the people he surrounded himself with, because there is a distinct difference between the 2017 Eagles with arguably less or similar talent. There's no reason that we should have DeSean Jackson and Jalen Reagor and not be getting more out of the passing game. And I know the Rams had Jalen Ramsey, but you're telling me that with both of these arguably top five tight ends, both of these speedster burners on the outside, Miles Sanders, Boston Scott, I know the offensive line is struggling, but you're telling me with all these weapons, you can't construct a game plan. You can't make those pieces work together. And, you know, at least for a little bit, I don't know. It's just, you lost by almost 20 points. You're not even hanging in this game. The Rams were doing whatever they wanted to do. They could have scored even more if they wanted to. The Eagles didn't even show up.
They didn't show up in the fourth quarter.
There was no energy. There was no fight. There was no sense of urgency. 3 points in the fourth quarter. In the second half, they scored 3 points all told.
Yeah. Not good.
No.
I think it might be time. You remember I used to have a phrase, push the panic button?
Oh, yeah. All the time you say that.
Instead, I'm going to say it is time to remove the glow away from the Super Bowl season. It is officially
I was ready to do that last year. People make too many excuses.
It is officially time. I saw this stat, and I can't get it out of my head. Since the Super Bowl win, the Eagles have won 19 games, lost 18. So by that, they're only 500. But it gets scarier because out of those 19 wins, 9 of them have come against Washington.
Yeah, I mean,
that's an inflated record.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Basically, it comes down to Doug Peterson. He has not won against quality opponents, and we're starting to see it.
He hasn't progressed since 2017, where other teams are trying new things and they're implementing new game plans and they're bringing in new personnel. We're like, let's just keep trying to repeat the success from 2017, but it's clearly not working. Okay. And
sorry, by the way, I meant nine of those wins were Washington and New York. Sorry. Giants get part of this too.
that doesn't get any better.
Yeah. It doesn't get any better, but just no. FYI.
Look, you know, this has been my argument the past 2 years. We play one of the worst divisions in all of football. I see no weight to making the playoffs as an NFC East division winner. That doesn't mean anything. It just doesn't. Everyone's like, oh, we can make the playoffs. Making the playoffs doesn't mean shit when you leave in the first round against clearly better opponents. All it does is validate to the front office that whatever they're doing is working because they're making the playoffs. We're going to end up like the Atlanta Falcons, okay? You don't want to end up like the Atlanta Falcons.
Specifically the Atlanta Falcons?
Specifically the Atlanta Falcons because they had their Super Bowl and then it's been all downhill from them.
Oh, okay.
I was reading something on Reddit that was like, they have all this talent, you know, but they just can't get it together because after we luckily won our Super Bowl.
Well, it is true that offense seems like it should be clicking more often with Matt Ryan and Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley. Like they have quality talent, and yeah, you're right. It seems like that's a team that can't seem to get it together.
They can't hang with it. The Eagles are the same way. The Eagles cannot hang with better teams because they got caught up in their Super Bowl win. I'm going to say it now. They got caught up in their Super Bowl win. They went into 2018 thinking they were hot stuff. They got sat down, and then in 2019 they tried to, you know, it's the same thing year after year. It's like, let's just rinse, repeat, try it again, try it again, try it again. you got to change the formula sometimes.
Yeah.
They're not trying to change the formula.
Yeah. It might be officially time to.
You know what pisses me off? J.J. Arcega-Whiteside still.
Yeah. Where's he been?
Second round pick. He's had I don't think he's had any receptions this season. I know it's only been two games, but in the past 2 years, he's done literally nothing.
Yeah. Unfortunately, that goes on Howie. Howie has been known whiffing on draft picks.
Which is another target of mine. I think people give him far too much credit recently. He's a master with the cap. Okay, that's fine. Keep him in an office where he's working on an Excel spreadsheet. Keep him out of the draft room.
Well, you still... That's not good for a general manager. You still want him involved in that process. And if he can't...
Do you?
But most organizations, you want him in there. But if he can't spot talent, then you know what? He needs to be the pure that's a separate job. Pure cap analysis. He's not a general manager.
Contracts and finding free agents and making cap space, but he cannot evaluate talent. We are dying because we cannot get rookies that can step up and make contributions. Jalen Reagor has been a non-factor. Andre Dillard, he's injured, but last year he didn't do anything. J.J. Arcega-Whiteside has been a waste. Where are these young guys that are supposed to be stepping up these past couple years?
Meanwhile, Nelson Agholor has a touchdown with the Raiders. Just FYI.
He'll be a Pro Bowler.
Yeah, right?
He'll be a Pro Bowler.
Yeah.
All right. Venting done.
All right. Where do you want to go? Where do you want to go next?
Let's. You want to jump into the Fantastic Four picks?
All right.
Some of the games that we are looking forward to this upcoming week. This is the Fantastic Four picks for Week 3. Let's try to remove ourselves a little bit from the Eagles, and let's focus on two teams who are doing surprisingly well early on here in the season. It's a Las Vegas surprise. The Las Vegas Raiders are traveling to New England to face off against the Patriots. Rich, who do you got in this game?
Raiders, they've been looking pretty good in their first two games.
I'm surprised. One and one without Tom Brady, you know?
And the Patriots, they've been looking pretty good as well. Here's the thing, though. I think the Raiders got lucky last Monday night going up against a Saints team that was without Michael Thomas and Drew Brees. His age is starting to finally show. He wasn't really bombing them the way he used to. So I think the Raiders kind of got lucky that they had a, for lack of a better word, easy opponent, but not, I don't want to say easy because that makes it sound like they didn't do anything, but a less than formidable challenge than what they had thought for Monday Night Football.
The Saints weren't 100%.
Correct. Yes. The Patriots, though, I think they're starting to get their momentum together. And Bill Belichick, he gave the Seahawks a pretty good run for the money. He's turning this offense into the number one rushing attack in the league between his random crew of running backs, which, seriously, as someone who's trying to play fantasy football, it is ridiculous to try and follow what the hell's happening with that running back core. It's like every other week, it's a different running back that carries the rock. It's crazy. And then on top of that, you have Cam Newton who's taking it, in on his own. So for this, I'm going to go with the Patriots, and we'll see if the interesting combo running attack still prevails in this game.
Yeah, I always default to Patriots at home, just because that's, where they're most comfortable. Cam Newton's really surprised. I didn't think the Patriots were going to be, I know it's early, but 1-1 without Tom Brady, still
they
pretty good.
They could have had that game against the Seahawks.
And that's the thing. They came within one score of the Seahawks, and the Seahawks are, for the past, I don't know how many years, 10 years, they have been very formidable.
Vegas has them right now as the favorites to win the NFC.
The Seahawks.
Yes.
Well, there you go. So the Raiders, they had a very bad season last year, and early on, lots of teams can be good early on, so I'm going to default back to the Patriots, because until they prove that they don't have it anymore, you got to go with them. As long as Bill Belichick is coaching there and they have, Cam Newton is proving that he's still got gas left in the tank. So you can't bet against them just yet. I'm going Patriots.
Yep.
Next up, you have two NFC powerhouses. You have the Green Bay Packers traveling to the Saints. I know they're coming off their loss against the Raiders, but you can't rule out the Saints just yet. It is a Sunday primetime game. Rich, who do you got in this one?
I don't know. I think I'm going to rule them out. They looked...
Oh, wow. Even at home.
They looked flat coming out against the Raiders on Monday night. And Drew Brees, they got to figure out a different way to work him into some of these passes, because he clearly has lost some zip, especially on the deep ball. And without Michael Thomas stretching the field, it's not a good look for this offense. Meanwhile, the Packers, they're rolling right along. Even if Davante Adams is hurt, there might be a rumor that he might not play. They might hold him just out of caution because he is their number one wide receiver. You know what? They still got the Packers are one of those teams. They just always seem to find a bargain bin wide receiver talent. It's like their third stringer will randomly pop up and have a 100-yard game, because that's how good Aaron Rodgers can be sometimes. But a lot of people are also forgetting that part of their offense, Aaron Jones, is a top five running back. How do you like that? You know, we usually think the Packers as this massive passing juggernaut. Their running game has actually been the thing that has led to consistent success. So I'm going to go with Packers on this one. I think they win this one easy.
Man, this one is a tough one. I don't think I'm as sold as you are. The Packers right now, only two games in, but the Packers right now have the top-ranked offense in the league. Meanwhile, on the other side of things, the Saints, they're pretty much middle of the pack everywhere. But the Saints at home is always tough. That Superdome – well, that's not true anymore.
No crowd, no.
No crowd. Wow. Man, I'm still not used to football being on right now. Man, yeah, how did that changes things a lot, you know? Scratch it. I'm going to go with Packers too.
Yeah, there you go. I convinced you.
You convinced me, you know, because I'm still in the whole mindset of home field advantage. And then I caught myself. I'm like, no, there is no home field advantage really.
Two years ago, this would have been a very close game.
I still think it can be a close game. I'll say this. I don't think the Saints will let happen what happened on Monday again. But short week, you know, Drew Brees getting old. There's a lot of variables at play here, but I give the slight edge to the Packers. I think it's going to be closer than you give it than you think, Rich. But I do give the slight edge to the Packers. You convince me.
Okay.
Next up, we have some AFC fireworks and a possible playoff preview. These have got to be everyone's two favorite teams in the AFC, the Kansas City Chiefs traveling to Baltimore to face off against the Ravens Monday night. Rich, this should be a fun game. Who do you got?
Yeah, this is big. This might determine who gets
this AFC championship type stuff right here.
Yeah, this might determine who gets the number one overall seed in the AFC, because both of these teams are so good. They both play a very similar style of football. My concern is the Chiefs almost blew the game last week to the Chargers. They had to go into overtime, and they almost lost that game. Whereas the Ravens, they seem to be handling their opponents very well. And one of the head coaches said to Ian Rapoport that they think Lamar Jackson hasn't actually hit his peak yet, and that frightens him. And wow, that's an interesting quote that I can't get out of my head. So even if the Ravens lose this game, the Ravens, I think, still have a better road to go forth. I think the Ravens are going to pull this one out just from what I've seen from the last 2 weeks, but this is going to be a very good game. This is worthy of Monday Night Football. This is one of those games that's worthy to clear your schedule and watch the entire game, I think.
Yeah, I think the key thing to take away here is exactly what you said, that this game is going to be amazing. It should be very close. The last time they met up, it was a very close game. Man, as much as I want to say trust in Big Red, you know that in the AFC, my two favorite teams, quote-unquote favorite, are the Chiefs and the Patriots in terms of the teams that I usually
right.
side with.
You're a secret Patriots fan.
I'm not a secret Patriots. Shut up, Rich. You know what I mean? Whenever we're picking
we get rid of that background, we're going to find like a random old Tom Brady jersey behind you.
This is just all Patriots gear. Now, what I mean to say is that when we're picking games, I usually side with the Chiefs and the Patriots. But this is going to be one of those rare times where I can't side with the Chiefs here. Lamar Jackson is just such a unique threat. I mean, I know Patrick Mahomes does a lot of similar things, but Lamar Jackson, I still think the Ravens have this chip on their shoulder. Mm-hmm. You know, I still feel like they feel as if people don't give them the proper respect. You know, they had exits from the playoffs in the past couple of years that they're not happy with. They really, really want to change the narrative, and they want to make a case for being the best team in the AFC. Now's their chance. You know, the Chiefs already won their Super Bowl. Maybe they're feeling a little bit of a Super Bowl hangover. The Patriots don't have Tom Brady. They smell blood in the water. They're really going to come out guns blazing this season, try and make a real push for things. I like the Ravens. They're young. They're hungry. They're talented. They got that chip on their shoulder. It's going to be fireworks. It could be an incredible game, but I'm going Ravens.
All right. And here we
finally
go.
The Cincinnati Bengals come into town to face off against the Philadelphia Eagles. Rich, who do you got in this one? And does it matter?
Yes. The Eagles should have this one. If the Eagles blow this game,
like the Washington football team.
This is going to be a different set of stakes. Losing to the Redskins, you can kind of chalk it up to maybe first game of the season, division opponent. There's some avenues for excuses. The Eagles going up against a rookie quarterback. I don't care if he was the number one overall draft pick. He's still a rookie quarterback. AJ Green, who really hasn't done that well yet this season and really hasn't done anything in the last 3 years since he got hurt. Joe Mixon, who has been a decent running back, but that's kind of all you can say. Like nothing really crazy. And their defense has been bottom five consistently the last 3 years. Come on. This is bad. If the Eagles lose this game to the Bengals, that's it. That's push the panic button. This has to be a must-win game for the Eagles. There should be no qualms about it. And if there is, the season's lost already at 0-3. That would be the death knell for this season already.
I want to pick the Bengals just because I'm so mad at the Eagles. but logically, I know that doesn't make sense. Part of me still thinks that the Eagles aren't going to win this one.
They do. That's game over for this season. There is no logistical reason why they'd lose this game.
Rich, you're acting like that means they're not going to lose.
I'm just saying if they do, then pack it in for this season. They pack it in this season, trade Zach Ertz, and cash out. They lose this game, say goodbye to the 2020 season.
I think it's interesting that Zach Ertz has seen a dramatically reduced role in the offense the past two games.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just saying, I said last year the Eagles need to start thinking about rebuilding.
It's happening sooner than later.
It really is. Those big quarterback contracts, I'm telling you, they kill you. Sure, I'll take the Eagles. Why not? This is going to be the game where they win, and everybody says, oh, there's hope for the season. We can make the playoffs, yada, yada, yada. It's fool's gold. Sure, they'll beat the Bengals, but that's only because the Bengals are only marginally better than the Browns and the Jets. But don't be surprised if the Eagles lose. Honestly, anything is possible. These are the types of games like the Miami Dolphins last year. Oh, they got this in the bag, and then they lose. Never, ever overestimate or underestimate the Eagles' ability to suck when they really want to.
Spoken like a true Philadelphia fan.
So mad. I'm so mad. That whole game, I was so mad. I'm still mad at them. Like I said, I want to pick the Bengals just despite the Eagles, but logically I can't. So, unfortunately, begrudgingly, I'm picking the Eagles.
Well, Mike, if you're that angry at the Eagles, would you be willing to ever write a letter to announce your resignation from the Eagles fandom?
announce my resignation from the Eagles fandom?
Yeah.
What does that even mean?
Well,
is this a job?
Yeah, right?
Feels like a job being an Eagles fan sometime. Jesus.
Yes. So I want to get into the story real quick and then we'll end sports. This Falcons fan, he got so frustrated. This was the last straw. So for those who don't know, the Falcons, they were up by multiple scores, and then they were up again later in the game, and they blew the game to the Cowboys with there was an insane onside kick that they muffed. There was a drive down the field that they totally just didn't put up any resistance to. It was an embarrassing loss for the Falcons against the Cowboys. And it was so bad that this one fan actually typed up a resignation letter and mailed it to the Atlanta Falcons organization. And I have it.
Okay. Oh, you're going to read it.
I have it right here.
Oh, my God.
This guy, okay. His name is Harlan Shackelford. What a name.
And that name sounds fake.
No, that's his real name. And okay. He has the best part is if you look at the letter, it's actually all formal. I tweeted it if you want to go see it for yourself. It's actually like indented and like has the proper header and like everything for like an official resignation letter. So I'll just read it for you real quick here. This is what Harlan Shackelford mailed to the Atlanta Falcons.
Okay.
Quote, "It is with immense frustration and grief that I must inform you I am resigning from my position as an Atlanta Falcons football fan effective immediately following the second worst loss in NFL history. The first loss also belongs to you and your efforts in the Super Bowl when you blew a 28-3 halftime lead against the New England Patriots. According to Pro Swap, you had a 99.9% chance to win when you were leading with 39-30 with 2 minutes and 33 seconds left to go in the game on Sunday.
Oh, my God.
Then Dak Prescott found wide receiver Michael Gallup for a 38-yard gain to your 5-yard line, and the rest is history. Today was the official last straw for me. You've had since June 30th, 1965 to win the Super Bowl, and for 20,171 days, you failed to do so.
What?
Therefore, in my 28th year of existence, I have decided to no longer embrace this organization. This is not for me and is definitely not for you. Thank you for nothing except cheap game day tickets due to the consistent mediocrity that you've continued to produce, failing to ever start the season as NFL champions."
Wow.
He
went all out. So
one more sentence. Oh. I know you will probably write back and tell me that the door is always open to return to the Atlanta Falcons, but let's be honest, we both know that's because you don't know how to close anything.
Oh, man, that last line.
Signed, Harlan Shackelford. I salute you. That is how you resign from a fandom.
That's really impressive.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe a little over the top, maybe a little melodramatic. But
that's worth it.
That was real good. Was real good. I will take issue with one point. He mentioned that they've had since 1965 to win a Super Bowl. I mean, like, the Eagles have been in existence for forever. You know, they were in the same boat. I know we got ours, but, you know, it's like, all right, calm down.
Yeah, but yeah, I can feel his frustration.
I can feel his frustration, but. You know,
I liked it. I salute this dude. That's perfect.
Okay. So we both agree we like it. It's great. It's humorous. But could you ever get mad enough at the Eagles to resign from being a fan?
I don't know. They would really have to do some dumb crap.
I have to admit, there's been some times where I've been like, God, it is so much more effort to be a fan than to not be a fan. But yeah, I always come back. It's like an abusive relationship. I always go back. No matter how many times the Eagles hurt me, you always got to – I mean, the early 2000s, that was a rough road there. But you know what? You have to support them.
Yeah.
You know, you got to
– Unless it's too much.
This guy's weak. This guy, this guy that wrote the letter is weak.
Oh, all right. I'll at least give sympathy. I liked this whole thing. I love the fact he had the official letterhead. I loved it.
The letter was great. Execution is perfect.
Yeah.
And the letter is hilarious. But, I mean, come on. You can't give up your team. You can't. That's nonsense. The Eagles have had some really bad years. You don't hear any diehard Eagles fans resigning from fandom. Come on now.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's an entertaining way to leave a fandom, which is appropriate for the second batch of topics. We got some entertainment news. Mike, we got some big video game news. What do we got?
Yes, we do. This is actually, in terms of the video game world, earth-shattering news. Microsoft announces that they have officially purchased ZeniMax Media, who is the parent company of Bethesda. You might remember them as the company that owns, develops, or publishes major franchises like The Elder Scrolls, Fallout, Dishonored, Prey, Doom, Wolfenstein. The list goes on and on. In total, Microsoft spent $7.5 billion, with a B, dollars, making it one of the largest acquisitions in video game history. It gives them ownership of 9 different studios, developers of all those aforementioned properties. This is huge. I mean, they basically just bought the entire open world RPG genre with this purchase. No, literally. Yeah. I mean, like every major open world Western RPG you can think of, they basically own the rights to. This is huge news. Perfectly timed by Microsoft. Immediately after Sony had their price and release date announcement, they come out a few days later. They're like, surprise, we own the creators of The Elder Scrolls and Fallout. I mean, that right there as a headline, they're huge franchises.
Yep.
Those are quote unquote system sellers. If the next entry in those franchises are Xbox exclusive, there will be people who will buy that console specifically for those games. It's a huge move, I think, by Microsoft.
Yep. A very powerful move to combat the Sony exclusives. I wonder what Sony will respond to this. I have to imagine they're going to have to try and combat this in some way, shape, or form.
There have been tons of rumors that Sony's been looking to acquire some smaller studios, such as Kojima Productions, who did Death Stranding. Of course, they're always looking to work closer with Hideo Kojima, one of the most renowned developers. I know that there's rumors that they've wanted to acquire the one developer that does a lot of their remasters for them. But these are like not, I don't want to say like C tier acquisitions, but like developing a studio just for remasters does not seem like an appropriate response.
Yeah.
To another company buying Bethesda.
That's kind of lame. Yeah.
Yeah.
Kojima is already loyal to Sony anyway.
Right. That would be a good get, but like, again, not enough to counteract the Bethesda. So there is some analysis out there that says Sony doesn't need to do anything to respond because they have so many established franchises. Sony fans are going to continue to buy PlayStation because of Spider-Man and Uncharted and Last of Us and Horizon Zero Dawn and Gran Turismo and MLB The Show. They have such a wealth of games, you know, that their fans are set, much like Nintendo fans are set. You know, Nintendo, you have to think about the work Nintendo did to build up Mario and Kirby and Zelda as franchises and Donkey Kong and all, you know, their lauded franchises. Sony is trying to do something similar the past two generations with their exclusives. So you basically have Nintendo fans will always buy Nintendo. Sony fans will always buy Sony. This is really the gamer that plays Call of Duty and that plays The Elder Scrolls. They don't care which system. They just want the system that plays, you know, the big popular games. That's the crowd that would be swayed by a move like this. If you're already going to buy Sony, I don't think this move is going to sway you. Like, I'm not going to be like, I'm going to jump to Xbox now.
Yeah.
You know, I imagine you would be in a similar boat.
No, I would still, that's not enough for me to switch over. No, I would agree.
Right. Furthermore, there's some talk out there that suggests that The Elder Scrolls and Fallout being so big Microsoft might not want to lose the money of it being a multi-platform game. Mm-hmm. Because a game like The Elder Scrolls, for instance, has now come out on three different generations of consoles. Because it came out on PlayStation 3, PlayStation 4, and they're going to re-release it on PlayStation 5. So why would Microsoft want to limit the amount of money they're making by, you know, keeping it exclusive to their console? Yes, that will help them sell consoles, but they could make way more money by selling it. And we've talked about this before. That's kind of the direction. Minecraft is an Xbox-produced game, and you can play that on PlayStation. Cuphead, again, Microsoft-published. You can play it on Nintendo and Sony systems. We haven't seen, like, a big Microsoft game make that jump. But I think as they trend more towards the Game Pass model, the Netflix of games type thing, I still maintain they see services as the big money maker. If they can somehow work with Sony to be like, look, if you want these franchises, you got to let Game Pass on your console, then they can get PlayStation gamers to subscribe to Xbox Live, to subscribe to Game Pass, and they just get that recurring fee every month for access to these handful of games that, you know, say you're a Fallout fan, you want to play Fallout, you know, Xbox is like, sure, subscribe to Game Pass and have a Game Pass app on the PlayStation and you can stream or download Fallout on the PlayStation. That is where the money lies. And I think this is more about getting a stronger foothold in that space than it is about selling consoles. I don't think Xbox is too interested in selling consoles. I think they're more interested in making a compelling service that people want to subscribe to.
Yeah, it's definitely two different business models from Microsoft and Sony. It'll be interesting to see how they interact with the next generation of consoles. And we'll see how well they fare come holiday season and 2021 and beyond.
Yeah.
Before we leave entertainment, we teased about this in the beginning. We want to talk a little bit about the Emmys. The reason why is because I think our favorite shows did the best. The big winners, we mentioned at the beginning, Schitt's Creek winning 7 awards, including the big 4 for acting, which is the first time ever a comedy has done that. Succession picking up 4 wins, and Watchmen picking up 4 wins. So, Mike, I gave you props for recommending Schitt's Creek to me last week, but is there anything else you want to tag on and gloat about Schitt's Creek?
Well, I just want to give props to my girlfriend for getting me to watch Schitt's Creek. I mean, that was, you know, she was raving about the show, and I'm like, you know, I heard good things about it, never actually sat down to watch it. And then, you know, I will say this. This is something that I've heard a common criticism. Season 1 isn't that great. I agree. Season 1 isn't that great, as is the case with a lot of shows. But, man, seasons 2 through 5, I'm telling you, if you can stick with it past the first season, the characters become so well developed. They become more than their caricatures, and you see those little cracks where you're like, oh wow, they're, you know, actual people with actual problems, but they're still absurd and they're still funny. And that's a testament to just the overall direction of the show. And one of the major reasons why I think they won those acting awards, because they take these caricaturist-esque characters and they make that, and you make them relatable in ways that you don't think they could be because they're so outlandish, and it makes you want to root for them, even though in their own ways they're all terrible people. And that's what the humor is like they're all in their own unique way kind of terrible, but they're all very uniquely human as well. Yeah. And that makes them relatable, and it makes us as viewers want them to succeed, even though they're obnoxious and absurd and annoying, you still want them to do well, you know? And so, I can't stop singing the show's praises. I've only watched up to season 5 because that's all that's available on Netflix. So I'm dying to find out what happened in season 6 that warranted 7 wins.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like, you know, it has to be
this
special.
This is mind blowing for a comedy to do this
for
well.
A comedy, right?
Yeah. So, pretty stellar reviews for Schitt's Creek.
I know you watched season 2.
Yeah, I'm up. Yeah, I finished the first two seasons, and I've been loving it. It's been Rachel and I's binge watching show of choice lately, so it's great. And the episodes are short too. You just bam, 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 you knock them out.
Plow through them.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
So I ranted and raved about Schitt's Creek. Rich, go ahead. Tell me I should watch Succession again.
Yes.
I know I do. I know. And now even further, I mean, beating huge shows in the drama category. Better Call Saul, The Crown, Handmaid's Tale, Killing Eve, Mandalorian, Ozark, Stranger Things. I mean, these are some of the best shows on TV, you know, bar none. And Succession came out on top.
I've been telling people this show is the best written show on TV right now. The storylines, the business settings, the dry, dark humor, the outrageous characters. It's just been fascinating to watch. It's so good. I've actually rewatched the whole series already again.
Wow.
It's so good. It really is. And I'm dying to see where they go for season three. I hope it's not delayed too much by coronavirus, cause I heard they had finished writing, and then coronavirus hit. So I don't know how far they're at with producing a third season, but it's the smartest show on TV right now. And it's got everything you want. There's drama, there's backstabbing, there's outrageous moments. It's great. It checks off all the boxes that you want out of an HBO show, and it deserves to win best drama and all the Emmys it got. I also want to give a shout out to Jeremy Strong, winning best lead actor in a drama series. Because his character turn in the second season is pretty amazing. He really went through a lot of hills and valleys, if you will, with his character. And I'll leave it at that. If you know what I'm talking about, you know what I'm talking about. So, yes, Succession, must watch. I'm telling you, it's so good.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely incredible stuff. Really excited to see that Watchmen won a couple of awards as well.
Yep.
That was a really good one. I know we were both big fans of, also tying Succession for four wins. Actually, those three shows right there were the biggest winners of the night.
Right Schitt's there.
Succession and Watchmen. And I just want to point out, again, tooting my own horn, that in previous years, I have recommended all these shows in This Week in Entertainment. Now, how many did I watch of my own volition? That's right. Zero, but I still recommended them. I still recommended them. And I feel like that bears some, that bears some repeating, that I recommended them. Whether or not I actually watched them is a different matter.
All right. So you get a little bit of credit.
I get a little bit of credit. That's right. You follow this show and you get the scoop on, you know, the shows you should be watching.
Okay. So fair enough. There you go. Mike gets a little bit of credit.
Just a tiny bit.
Yeah. But nevertheless, we'll say it once again, Schitt's Creek and Succession. If you haven't watched it, check it out. They won Emmys for a reason. Check it out.
Right. Watchmen as well.
And Watchmen. Yep. Okay. So we're done sports and entertainment. It's time to hit some odd news before we wrap up this episode. And Mike, you're going to like this episode. We're not in Florida, so I'm sorry. No sound effect needed. We're going to Maine in this episode. Which is weird. Usually, Maine...
I don't think we've ever been up there.
Not usually. Maine doesn't usually have that many odd news stories. But we are going to follow the tale of the Lilac Avenger.
Okay, the Lilac Avenger.
Yes.
Sure.
Be ready. Be on the lookout. If you're living in Maine, the Lilac Avenger may strike soon. this person that they're calling the Lilac Avenger... Maine police are seeking the public's help in identifying a woman who has taken her pleasure with Donald Trump and his signs to a new extreme. The suspect, cops say, has been defacing Trump lawn signs in Hampton, a town outside of Bagnor, Maine. In addition to scribbling negative comments on the sign, the woman has also decided to travel around on a bicycle, get the Trump signs, and smear dog and human feces all over these signs on people's property, according to cops.
So,
Mike, please, yeah, use your train of thought, because there are some interesting questions to ask on this.
So, you know, the first thing that probably occurred to me is the fact that she had a store of feces, a supply of it, in order to do this. That is the most troubling thing to me.
Yes. I hope everyone got the first part of the story. She's riding on a bicycle. She's not she's not like out walking her dog and happens to see a Trump sign and be like, oh, you know what? I'm going to use, you know, I got a convenience.
No. She is carrying feces with her on a bicycle. So like she puts, I just imagine, if you will, for a second, the image in my head, a metal pail on each of the handlebars, one labeled dog, one labeled human. And she's just pedaling along with her buckets, you know, because you have both on one side because it makes it unbalanced. So you have to have one bucket on each side. Or maybe she has a basket. You know, it's like a nice bike. You know, it's like a Sunday bike ride bike. And she's got the basket in front with her bucket in there. But you're right. The alarming thing is that she's transporting poop.
Yeah, like this isn't convenience. Like she actually is planning out her feces attack.
She woke up and she said, "Let me get the bucket of shit because I gotta go deface some signs."
Yeah,
because let's take it a step further. How does she have that much? She's been saving it up. You don't just happen across a bucket of poop,
right?
You didn't save that bucket of poop. It doesn't materialize out of nowhere, right? You are actively collecting it in preparation for this. So she woke up and said, "Today's the day where I get the bucket of poop." And she doesn't drive around; she bikes around.
Yeah, you got to get your exercise in. You got to get your cardio. Exactly.
There was a great deal of planning that went into this.
Yeah,
that makes it very alarming to me.
Now, why is she called the Lilac Avenger? You may ask. That is because
I forgot about that.
Yeah, right. You would think they would add some sort of like, you know, crappy Lilac Avenger or something, but no. We're the main main people don't want to the main cops. They don't want to upset people. They're just going to call it the Lilac Avenger.
Okay,
you know, a nice PC term.
Right.
The reason why she's called this is because her bicycle is lilac covered. And according to an eyewitness, she wore lilac-colored Crocs and lilac-colored shorts in one of her vandalism attempts. So okay. she's very...
So she's the Lilac Avenger.
She's obsessed with the color lilac. She loves that color.
And poop, apparently.
And poop. So, it's all about nature. She's got lilac and poop.
It's all about nature, lilac and poop. There you go. Yeah. That's, oh my God. It's so upsetting.
Yes. And as is tradition, I don't have I don't have a, you know, a mug shot, but one of the eyewitnesses was able to snag a quick photo of the Lilac Avenger
on the bike
leaving the premises. So
here
we go. This is her. Oh no, I don't. Oh no, it's too bright. I don't know if you can see it. No,
I can't see it. Oh
no. Oh, wait, how about
hold it right there.
There you go.
So there she is. Wait, where's the bucket of poop?
I don't know. This is after she dumped the poop. So
okay, so she got rid of the poop bucket.
She's escaping. She's leaving the poop, the scene of the crime.
Okay.
So, because there she doesn't have it.
Correct me if I'm wrong. You said multiple signs, right?
Yes. She's done this multiple times.
I would imagine she needed a good amount of poop.
I mean, I don't know. I don't. I guess it depends on the size of the signs.
What is the poop to sign ratio?
Yeah, I don't know.
What is the formula here?
Do you...
How many signs worth of poop?
Yeah, like, are we talking about, like, the little tiny ones that you can just stick in the grass?
We're talking about, like, the big ones.
Or are you talking about, like, Trump has, like, those big flags? Those are huge.
Right.
You're going to need some significant poop to cover that.
Some significant poop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the one that those you just chuck the whole bucket at and run.
Oh God.
That, there's no other way you can do it.
Like splatter painting.
Yeah. It seems that the lilac colors will be quickly identified by cops. Cops are expecting that they will find her within the coming week.
Do they expect her not to change her clothes?
I don't know. She's the Lilac Avenger. She's got a name now. She can't.
They make it sound like the clothing is part of her. Like, oh, we'll be able to identify her based on a pair of shorts. She definitely won't change those at any point.
She can't. That's part of her nickname.
That's her superhero costume.
Yeah. According to Maine cops, even if she is caught, the maximum fine for destroying a political sign is only $250. So,
but how many signs?
I don't know.
That could get pricey very quickly.
I don't know. But the point is they think it's not a big deal if she comes forward. So if you live in Maine and you know who the Lilac Avenger is, just tell her to just square things up with cops.
Right.
Just save them some work.
Right. Exactly. It's going to be a little pricey, but you know, it's better to do that than to have them, you know, try and hunt you down, and then you're like evading the police, and it becomes a manhunt, and then you get arrested, and then you go to jail.
Yeah.
Then, you know, just
come on. You're storing dog poop and your own poop. Like, come on, let's just stop it. We don't need any more of this.
Right. Exactly. She should just come clean.
Literally.
She would be a folk hero if she did. She literally.
Literally come clean.
Literally come clean.
Please, for the sake of everybody.
Yeah. Don't bring any of that with you.
Yeah. All right, so there you go. That's your odd news story of the week. Before we officially wrap up the episode, we got some apocalypse activities for you to do in the upcoming week and weekend. Mike, what do you have for apocalypse activities?
So this is something that I could have mentioned at the top of the show, but I saved it for the end because I figured this would be good for you, Rich. Me and the girlfriend went to Crystal Cave this past weekend. If you've never been to Crystal Cave, it's a natural cave near Kutztown, PA, about an hour north of here, not too far away. And it's really cool. You get to go, you know, see all the different rock formations, and they have like little like nature trails there. But the reason I'm bringing this up now is because it is the perfect weather to start doing these fun outdoorsy activities. You know, it's like in the 60s or 70s, you know, you can feel comfortable in like a pair of jeans and like maybe a sweater and, you know, a nice pair of like comfy shoes. And it's like right now, like late September, early October, it's like the perfect time to go do all those, you know, stereotypical fall activities, go pick apples and go to the pumpkin patch and go hiking and go to, you know, Morris Arboretum or Crystal Cave or tons of great fall outdoor activities to do. So that's what we've been trying to do, trying to, you know, make the most of the good weather. I know you being a fan of the cooler weather, that's right up your alley. You can go outside, not sweat to death. I'm right there with you, man. I'm loving it. Yep. I throw on like a light sweater. I'm good to go.
Yep. So there you go. Some ideas if you want to do stuff outside. I'm just going to be lame and I'm just going to reiterate. If you want to stay inside, definitely watch Succession and Schitt's Creek. There's a reason why these shows won Emmys. They're that good. There you go. You got the best drama and you got the best comedy. So something should be up your alley between the two of these shows.
Exactly. All right? You're going to like one of them.
Yeah, watch one of them, all right? Stop being picky, settle down, watch one of them, all right? end of discussion. But the reason why I'm just ending it there is because we are over our time. It's time to wrap up this episode of the Crispy Compact Communique. Thank you guys for watching and listening to another crazy episode of the Crispy Compact Communique. If you like what you heard, make sure you go to our website, thecrispynoodle.com. Make sure you're following us on all the social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, the whole shebang. So you know what we're up to and any other cool things we want to send your way.
That's right. You can also subscribe to our channel on YouTube where you get the video versions of this podcast, but you can still subscribe to the audio version on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, and Google Podcasts. Just make sure you search for, download, and subscribe to the Crispy Noodle Podcast on the podcast service of your choice.
Yep. And once again, that production change. The video will go out Wednesday, 9 p.m., and then the following morning, the audio will be available as an audio podcast for those that listen to us while you're driving to work or driving wherever you're going in this lovely fall weather.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, we got that. We got SoundCloud. We're everywhere. Just find us.
Just find us.
We're there.
The internet. You know how to Google.
Yeah.
But if you do find us, there's so many ways to get in touch with and share the Crispy Noodle podcast. But if you want to find us individually and share your sports, entertainment, and odd news stories for us to cover on the podcast, you can find us on Twitter. I'm at Mikey Costanzo, MikeyCostanzo.
And I am at Rich Liebig, RichLiebig. Find us on the Twitters. Let us know what's happening. If you got a story or comment that you want us to talk about on next week's episode, we will take it under consideration and we'll give you a shout out if we use it. So let us know. But for right now, it's time to wrap this up. We are over our time. Thank you guys. This has been the Crispy Compact Communique, an offshoot of the Crispy Noodle podcast. Let us be the crispy noodle in your vegetarian salad of life and boring news. That's going to do it, I think. Anything else, Mike?
No, everybody stay safe and happy.
That's right. So that'll do it. We'll see you guys next week.
See you guys.
Later. Bye-bye.
Some of us have great stories, pretty stories that take place at lakes with boats and friends and noodle salad. A lot of people, that's their story. Good times, noodle salad.
I'm Robert Waters, and this has been the Crispy Noodle 2020.